From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on September 11th, 1893, at the World's Congress Auxiliary Building in Chicago. It marked the start of the first ever Parliament of World Religions. Leaders of nearly a dozen religions attended in 1893, and for more than 2 weeks they discussed a wide range of issues. It wasn't until 100 years later, 1993, that the Parliament of World Religions was revived, and since then, it's been held intermittently every 4 or 5 years or so. The next parliament will happen in Toronto in November. But first, Rochester is hosting a pre-parliament event today, and the executive director of the Parliament of World Religions is in town with us. The theme of this year's Parliament of World Religions is the power of inclusion, the power of love, and that should give us a lot to talk about. Let me welcome our guest for the hour. Dr. Larry Greenfield is here. He's the executive minister of the American Baptist Churches of Metro Chicago, and a long resume that includes not just executive director of the Parliament, but, we're happy to say, a past president of Colgate-Rochester Divinity School in Rochester, New York. I say happy to say because you said it was a happy 10 years for you here, yes?
It was a great 10 years.
Welcome back to Rochester.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. Also with us in studio is Dr. Muhammad Shafiq, executive director of the Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies and Dialogue. Dr. Shafiq, always a pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much.
And Dr. Susan Nowak, who is also Sister Susan of the Sisters of St. Joseph. And Dr. Nowak is chairperson of religious studies at Nazareth College, teaches a number of courses on religion. So that's a lot of perspectives there. It's great to have you here as well. Thank you.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Dr. Shafiq, tonight, 7 to 9 at the Schultz Community Center at Nazareth is a pre-parliament event. What do you want the public to know about tonight's event?
You know, this year, the Parliament of World Religion Congress at Toronto, that's very close to us, just 3 hours from Rochester. So we thought it is for the Western New York, and especially Rochesterian, to give them full information about the Parliament of World Religion. And that's why we are having the pre-parliament program this evening, which will be at 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. or 9 p.m. At the Schultz Community Center Forum. It's open for public. There will be a lot of information available about the pre-parliament. And I think we will be distributing some leaflets, some information. If those who come to attend that seminar tonight will get that and will get 15% off of their registration to the parliament if they register through Nazareth College, that code which has been given by the parliament. So they will get some discount also.
All right. So if you are interested in this, the Parliament of World Religions in Toronto in November, tonight's a chance to kind of get a flavor for what it's going to be all about. You can get a discounted registration, learn a lot more about it tonight here. And by the way, that Parliament of World Religions is going to go on for, you said, a week? Is that right?
7 days, yes.
Dr. Greenfield, so 7 days. And most people who attend in November in Toronto, you expect to be whom? Religious leaders, people of all different faith backgrounds? What kind of attendance are you expecting?
Well, usually for these parliaments, about 25-30% of the population or the registrants come from the local area. And for us, and when we were choosing Toronto, we drew a line, a radius line, of how long it would take to get to Toronto from a day's driving. And it turns out that a pretty significant part of the North American population is in that circle of being able to drive to Toronto in a day. So we may have to readjust our figures, but typically about 30% come from the local area, another 40% come from North America, and another 30% would come from international sites across the globe.
And certainly Toronto has a history of having religious events and figures, World Youth Day, huge day there in the past. And I'm wondering what a successful turnout would look like. What are you hoping for in November there?
Hoping for a minimum of 10,000 people. We had that in Salt Lake City, just over 10,000. A relatively small metropolitan area compared to Toronto. So we think we will have at least 10,000 people, and we hope that there will be more.
Even in 1893, a long list of religions represented, and in this particular event this year, you have indigenous peoples and an emphasis on a wide range of spiritualities and viewpoints. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we paid attention to the idea that indigenous religions are not a single religion. It isn't a category like Lutheranism or Judaism or so on. That these are very diverse, distinctive, unique traditions that all too often are not even considered, studied. And therefore that Canada, with a significant number of indigenous traditions, would be an ideal place to give real significant sustained attention to different indigenous religions. And then as well, not confining that to Canada, but to get representatives of indigenous traditions from across the globe. So it's going to be a rich, when we deal with the indigenous traditions in the parliament, we are dealing with issues of justice on the one hand, how they are subject, these peoples are subject to a kind of injustice, oversight, manipulation, exploitation of themselves and their land. But also we overlook the resources of these traditions for our own modern life, that there are there's a kind of wisdom in these traditions that has been incorporated into the major religious traditions of the world, as well as some things that world religions have not picked up and ought to see in our contemporary setting.
Listeners, we're going to talk going forward this hour about the broad themes of the Parliament of World Religions in November, of which their executive director of the parliament is here in Rochester today. That theme is the power of inclusion and the power of love. And we'd love to hear from you on that subject. Do you, how do you view inclusion in the context of religious faith? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Now, I don't want to draw too direct a line here, but there are some interesting things that I'm sure will be addressed, if not directly, when it comes to the younger generations, how younger generations in survey after survey tell you in the workplace, if they are going to houses of worship, inclusion matters more and they view it as more relevant than older generations. That doesn't mean, by the way, that older listeners don't care, but especially millennials and younger say that that inclusion is a driving factor for them and should be in just about any sphere of life. At the same time, younger generations, about 39-40%, are religiously unaffiliated. So we see higher levels of what we would assume to be non-belief, maybe atheism, skepticism, etc. And I don't want to draw too directly a line to say, well, that's because they don't see inclusion in religious faith. But there is probably some linkage there that religious faiths could be perceived as more inclusive if they're to be more attractive to younger generations. So let me ask all three of our guests, when we talk about the Parliament of World Religions and the broad theme of the power of inclusion in the context of religious faith, what does it mean to you?
The promise. It's the promise of inclusion that is the title and the power of love. And that's an important word for us, the promise, in that we're not saying, if you're inclusive, we promise you it's going to work. Rather, we're saying we haven't tried inclusion very much, and it's worth a try. So it's the promise of inclusion in that sense. And I think that relates to what your point is about young people. I live in a building. This is an analogy. A racially and culturally divided building. So when I go to a place that is homogeneous, I feel out of place. That is my life. And I think that operates for young people as well. That their life in the world is one of heterogeneity, of difference. So when they come to a place, maybe a cathedral or a church, a congregation, a synagogue, that is homogeneous, they feel like I do when I get outside my home and go to a place that's all the same color, same language, and so on.
A lot of the same socioeconomics.
Social economic is important as well. So on that front, I think we can account for the interest in inclusion among young people. I remember when we were choosing this theme, our first term was diversity. And so I called my daughter, who was a junior at Vanderbilt, and said, honey, how does this theme sound to you in terms of diversity? And she said, oh, that doesn't do it, Grandpa. We need a term that has to do with not just the numbers, but the way in which people are included into societies, classes, parties, whatever. And so I picked up on that, and used the term inclusive. But I had my comeuppance on that term as well, in that some people from a indigenous tribe in California said, "Watch it, be careful how you use that term, because it can be a paternalistic term. That is, the people who are in allow those who are out in on the terms of those who are on the inside already. What you've got to watch out for in terms of the parliament is that those who have been excluded before feel a sense of empowerment that they can enter in their own terms, on their own terms." So we're making efforts in the planning of this to be inclusive in that more belonging on one's own terms and not as a gift from someone else. Now, back to the question of the next generation feeling a little uncomfortable in defined religious communities. I think in part that has to do with a more privatized sense of meaning that young people wearing headphones and getting their enjoyment in all the time in terms of more communal settings, but in terms of the terms that they wish to employ through social media and so on, so that the congregational dimension is something that's not altogether familiar. They have it in class. You two can comment on that. But a lot of times, I work with a lot of young people at our office, and even when they're working, they got the earphones in, and are finding a sense of enjoyment in a rather private way. And I think that may be a part of it as well.
Hmm. Okay. Sister Susan, Dr. Nowak?
Well, I'm lucky enough that I spend most of my life really working with these young people. And I say to my colleagues, you know, that I am very lucky because I don't have a day when I don't want to go to work because of the interaction with these young people and the sharpness of their insights and their questions. And so what I do see is there is not a rejection of religion per se. Many of the students will say, "I'm spiritual, not religious." And by that, I hear them signaling to me that they don't see the institutions of religion giving them the kind of inclusion that they are looking for in their life. And many of them feeling very much that because of race or sexual orientation, because of gender, sometimes because of socioeconomics, that they themselves are automatically excluded. And what they're looking for and what they're extremely receptive to is when they do see within the institution of any religious tradition a willingness to deal with difference, but accepting difference as quote-unquote normal. So you do not come in the midst having to say, "Well, please accept me even though I'm gay. Please accept me even though I'm a woman. Please accept me even though I am of a race other than white." And when they hear the voices, either in the practitioners, the writers, the people who lead the rituals, when they have this sense that there is a true understanding of the human community as one group, and that they, even though they're younger voices, are willing to share their wisdom and their struggles with their community, when they get an inkling that there's a willingness to listen, they are ready to be there. But I hear stronger and stronger through the Black Lives Matter movement, the Me Too movement, the LGBTQ community. What I hear stronger and stronger is that we're not willing to be there as someone who is not really enfranchised. You want us, we're there, but you have to want us.
Dr. Shafiq.
Yeah, coming back to the parliament, you know, we all, when there is a parliament program, we take our students with us. And some of the students are hesitant why we have to go to Parliament of World Religion Congress. But when they get there, they see all sorts of spiritualities, all sorts of religions interacting together. And, you know, the students which we take them were there, when they come back, they are fully enthused by participating into the Congress. And we will have tonight, we will have some of our students presenting that when they went to Salt Lake City, when they were going from here, what was their impression, and when they participated, how they were immersed, totally immersed, and how they have changed and new personalities, and why Parliament is so significant for people participation, and what change it can bring in human life. So, for example, our students, there was the Gurdwara community was giving free lunches. Thousands of people were participating. And our students, especially from University of Rochester and Nazareth College, they volunteered to serve. Seeing new phenomena, how lunches and people were sitting on the floor and, and mostly they were asked to eat by fingers. And there was another tradition to see how food is given and how food is served. Other programs, you can see spiritual dances. You can see a lot of lectures here and there. So there is so much given in the parliament programs that it's really amazing to see. Personally, I think it is so significant for all people of faiths and non-faiths to see that new phenomena, how religions, faiths, spiritualities, and non-faiths are interacting together in the Parliament of World Religion Congress. So it's a unique phenomenon, actually.
It's interesting. Dr. Nowak raised a phrase that she hears often that I think is somewhat telling, the spiritual but not religious, or spiritual but not tied to a religious structure, organizational structure. I wonder if our younger listeners would love to hear from you directly. You can email the program, connections@wxxi.org. Do you feel that way? Do you feel spiritual but maybe put off at all by modern organizational structures of religion? Or do you not feel that way? Is that not a fair characterization? It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Now, on the subject of inclusion, a series of tweets has gone thermonuclear viral this week. They were written by Charlotte Clymer, who is a former member of the communication staff of Hillary Clinton. Charlotte is a trans woman, an Army veteran, and a Christian. And I want to read her thread. It's kind of a long one, but I want to read this because this has been shared tens and tens and tens of thousands of times. And then we're going to talk about it in the context of faith and inclusion. She wrote the following, quote, "Today I was sitting in front of a cafe in downtown D.C., minding my own business, when three people who were clearly tourists of some sort walked up and gestured for me to take out my headphones. And I did, and one of them said, 'Can we pray for you?' I asked them why they wanted to pray for me, and the same person answered that they felt called by God to walk the streets of D.C. and let God's voice tell them who might be broken or otherwise need prayer. They literally used the word broken. Now, I'm a Christian, and I'm not opposed to prayer or people praying specifically for me when done in good faith. But I was dressed femme as hell today with gorgeous makeup and earrings, and I sure as hell caught the gist of why these folks happen upon me to offer prayer. And I thought, let's do this. And I asked their spokesperson if she understood how it might look to be searching for broken people to pray for, and specifically pick out a random transgender person on the street to offer prayer. And they looked more than taken aback. So I stood up with what passed for a smile, barely concealing my annoyance with this situation, and I asked them what the Book of Matthew says about prayer. And their eyes go wide, and the guy on the right starts nervously stammering in front of me in front of this cafe. I have had it up to here with evangelicals sticking their noses into how my humanity is defined, and I will be damned if they're going to interrupt my Sunday afternoon coffee when I certainly wasn't bothering them. So I say, let's pray. and they nervously step forward into a circle. And I say, Lord Jesus, thank you for the benefit of these friends. And I'm quite honest with God about how I hope she'll bless my new friends with the priority for affirmation and inclusion of others, that their community will honor all as God made them and value the strength of diversity. And I specifically mention the natural beauty of the LGBTQ community and thank God again for making us as we exist. And I throw in there a genuine wish that their trip back home is a safe one. Evangelicals, you are not doing the Lord's work by dumping your misplaced condescension on random strangers that you believe to be broken. These people did not want to know more about me. They wanted to talk at me and pray at me, not with me. And I'm fairly sure Jesus would not do that. End quote. Charlotte wrote that on Twitter, and wow, did that catch fire. It's been shared so many times. I want to ask our guests how they feel about that. There's a lot there. Dr. Greenfield, I'll start with you. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's a terrific statement about where we are today, that those who adhere to a kind of traditional way of evangelizing the world don't realize how offensive that style is now. And that this capacity in this country, especially and with our cultural traditions of freedom of belief and so on, over against those traditions, also a part of the American experience, who think it is their responsibility to save souls, and have got to find a different way of doing their testimony to others. I just think it's a fantastic statement and a good signal to those evangelicals who revert to that older form of confessing their faith.
Hmm. Dr. Nowak.
Well, on one hand, I was smiling during the whole time and could only say bravo. What I would also say that could be interesting is the Spirit was definitely working through her at the moment. And by that, what I mean is, if we talk about the Spirit of God as that which helps us speak truth to and with one another, the Spirit of God which is asking for us to form community with one another, with all our differences, despite all our differences, in many ways, she's giving us a great example of what it means to engage and not just walk away. And I see us within our religious traditions, as well as between our religious traditions, mirroring the pluralism that I see in our wider national scale at this point in time. And so we don't offer to one another the chance to talk about the differences and to learn from one another. We rather put ourselves in silos apart from one another. And so my hope would be that her message isn't just simply don't do this, but it's look at one another's humanity, engage one another around the values, and talk beyond the differences that are supposed to divide us, particularly when they get to the point of saying, you are unethical, your lifestyle is not moral, yours cannot be connected with God.
Dr. Shafiq.
I think most of the issues come with the misunderstanding, with the lack of knowledge. When we see these things happening, you may know that Nazareth College highly emphasized diversity and inclusion. Recently, you know, Nazareth College is a very small college in that sense, but we hired a vice president for diversity and inclusion also, how to promote that. So the issue is through education, change cannot come. There will be boundaries, there will be barriers. That comes through education. And through education, that how people can know how to interact, how to appreciate, how to deal with one another. And I think that's a very, very significant issue. So it can happen on the school levels. It can happen on the college levels. It can happen. And what I have seen, and coming back to Parliament, really, when you see that diverse type of people from all regions of the world, you meet with Indians. I had sitting with Indian leaders, Pakistani leaders, people from Sri Lanka, people from Middle East. When you see all of this and their ideas and what they are thinking about, really, that is the change. change comes when you move, step forward, and meet with the one whom you don't know. And that's important, and that's really significant. And I think that's also happening through the Parliament of World Religion. And that's why we are encouraging people, if you are sitting on the side, take a step and be part of the Parliament of World Religion. You will see the difference.
Dr. Greenfield, you want to add to that?
When I think about it now, your example, all of those people, the four people, were doing something noble. They were reaching out and trying to express their sense of care for the other, including the prayer by the author of the quote. The problem was that the patterns in which we express our care weren't adapting to the new situation that we find ourselves in culturally. So we revert to type in terms of how we approach people and express our concern for them. I'd be interested in knowing from the story whether the people who were initially reaching out were in any way affected by and transformed by the woman who was the subject of this.
And certainly we don't know. Charlotte has indicated she thinks that they sort of wanted to get away as quickly as possible once they realized, wow, we thought we were going to kind of pray for the soul of a trans woman, not realizing the trans woman happens to be a Christian who might know the Bible better than we do.
Right.
So it kind of got, according to Charlotte, she has subsequently said, you know, they kind of got out of there quickly. So we don't know if they were impacted.
Yeah, what Matthew tells us to go into your own closet and pray, not do it out there in that sidewalk cafe.
Well, let me grab a phone call on the subject of, well, brokenness and many other ideas that we just heard expressed in that Twitter thread. This is Kitty in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Kitty.
Hi. I just want that you asked the question about whether or not young people were into spirituality but not religion. I'm not a young person, I'm an older person, but my feeling about that is, yes, I'm totally spiritual but not into religion. Part of the reason that I left a Christian church is because every Christian church that I've ever been part of mainly focuses on brokenness. I am a sinner, say the word and my soul will be healed. We practice that in every service. I'm a sinner. I don't see myself as a sinner or anyone else. I think we come into the world perfect and no one is broken, and we need to celebrate each other's wonderfulness, not brokenness. And when we focus on our own brokenness, that almost gives us permission to focus on other people's brokenness instead of focusing on positive things, which is what Jesus focused on, was loving your neighbors, not on finding your neighbor's brokenness.
All right, so Kitty, hang there for 1 second. I'm going to put you back on hold, and our producer can jump on with you because I'd love to follow up with you, but the audio quality wasn't great, and maybe you're on speaking through a hands-free or in a car or something like that. But what I want to do is I want to restate for the audience who might have had a hard time hearing a little of what Kitty said. She said she's 63 years old. She feels spiritual, not necessarily religious, left a Christian church because the message was always about the brokenness of people and how everyone's broken and how she doesn't feel broken. She doesn't look around and see broken people around her, and she felt that that emphasis is on fixing the broken leads to sort of maybe some of these situations we just heard in this Twitter thread. But in any case, she left because she didn't feel that that's a proper emphasis, that she doesn't feel broken. Sister Nowak, what do you think of that?
When I look at the human condition, I honestly see that there is brokenness. There is also healing, and there is also that to celebrate. And what I wonder is if Kitty might be talking about an emphasis on guilt and an emphasis on not being worthy, that at times can come through the religious message and has been emphasized in a number of traditions. Catholicism in and of itself has had to deal with what does it mean to be falling short. And so people talk about Catholic guilt. I think talking about guilt and saying that we are never good enough for God is religion when it's gone astray from its message. I think religion does, though, offer a way to heal and celebrate the human, doing both. I see that as part of the human condition that I look for religion to reach out to, the celebration as well as the healing.
Okay, let me ask Kitty to follow up there, and then we'll have our other guests weigh in. Go ahead, Kitty.
Hi. Yeah, what I was saying is that I think that when the tradition says on a regular basis, I am a sinner, and so say the word and my soul will be healed, and that's what we focus on, then that gives permission to focus on that, not just on ourselves, but on others. I don't think that's the intention, but I think that's how it works out. That's the thing that drew me away from religion, even as a young person, that practicing, I'm a sinner. I need God to fix me. I don't need God to fix me. God fixed me the first time. and that's how, like, I believe in focusing on the positive. I'm a therapist, and I believe in not finding out what your diagnosis is, but finding out what's right about you, what's good, how can we build on that? And that's what we need to do, whether we're coming together to celebrate God and where we came from, or whether we're just talking to each other. We need to celebrate each other's positiveness.
Yeah, so Kitty, there's a lot there, and I'm going to ask our guests to weigh in, but I want to ask you one quick follow-up. As you thought about mm-hmm. yourself throughout your life, as you said, you were a Christian, right? You were in the past. You went to a Christian church in the past?
Yes, I was brought up Catholic, then I went to several Protestant churches, and basically every church I was ever in talks about, I am a sinner, but just say the word, my soul will be healed. Like, it can be healed from outside. If I'm doing something wrong, I need to fix it.
Sure, sure.
I need to take responsibility and fix that. But that sort of, I got to fix it from outside, promotes shame, guilt is positive. Guilt makes you take responsibility and make it better. Shame makes you feel like, I'm just a terrible person, and the only way I can be fixed is if God fixes me or whatever. No, I'm not a terrible person. And that's not, shame isn't what we should be promoting in people.
Okay, and you said you feel like I'm not a sinner. You don't look around and see sinners.
Right.
And so what I wanted to ask you is, and maybe our guest will tell me this is an unfair question, but what I wanted to ask you is if you went throughout your life realizing, you know, maybe every religion is having conversations about what it means to be inclusive, but there still must be some framework of standards. And did it occur to you that, you know, that is so central to Catholicism, to Christianity, understanding sin, the nature of humans, that do you feel like you're not a Christian?
No, I don't feel like I'm a Christian. I feel like I am spiritual, but I am not a Christian.
Okay. Okay. Kitty, thank you for the phone call. Let me ask our guest. I'm going to go around the table. And Dr. Greenfield, what do you make of that?
Well, I had my comeuppance on this one when I was a president of Colgate Rochester Divinity School, Crozier, Bexley Hall, Baptist Missionary Training School. We've included everybody, even in the name. But one time I preached a sermon at the chapel at the Divinity School, and I mentioned the sacrament of penance and confession of sin and so on, and then led the congregation, student, faculty, congregation, in an act of confession of sin and assurance of pardon. And afterwards, a really bright young woman came up to me and said, I don't need that. I have felt all my life, I've been brought up thinking that I wasn't good enough because I was a female, or I didn't have the kind of attributes that that others had. I don't need a confession of sin. In my case, I need an affirmation of my abilities and my standing. And so ever since that time, I think of it every time, almost when I'm involved in a service. To be careful, yes, you can, there's something to be said for the acknowledgement of failure and so on. In many services, there's a time when people need to hear, yes, you are powerful and talented and so on, but make sure that you've shaped this in a way your assurance of pardon in a way that will reach someone and not deepen the guilt or deepen the shame when that's not what's needed.
I want to say, Dr. Nowak, I admire Kitty for drawing the conclusion about herself. Maybe I'm not a Christian, and I say that because I think if I'm doing my job journalistically, probing the idea of inclusion, I at least have to ask, you ultimately cannot be so inclusive that there are no standards. I mean, different religions have different definitions and boundaries, I would assume, and maybe inclusion, maybe the modern conversation of inclusion and faith that the parliament is going to focus on is, has it been too restrictive? Has it been too othering? Has it been too pushing people out instead of welcoming all? And welcoming, by the way, that Dr. Greenfield made the great point, that doesn't just define the terms by a dominant group, but that is truly welcoming. But there still have to be standards. And Kitty's conclusion about herself is, if this is still the core of Christianity, then I am not a Christian. And I wonder how you feel about that.
Oh, I can more than understand what she is saying. And I think in a particular way, the message and the crafting of the Christian message and the practices has been very difficult for women in particular. Mm. That there have been times, more than times, where the Christian message has been a conveyor of the fact that the female's body, sexuality, is a negative thing, a temptation. The identification of the introduction of temptation with Eve and the way that that has carried out in very real ways for women's lives. I think that has to be addressed and not backed away from. I think the discounting of women and their intellect has been something that's part and parcel of religions, and not just Christianity, but most definitely there. My difference is probably with Kitty is the fact that I see that as when religion has allowed itself to adapt to a cultural message that is not really at the core of the tradition. And so I don't see Jesus of Nazareth as someone who was pointing out anyone in the crowd as less than and not worthy of. But I do see plenty of times when the church institution, in its teaching and its interpretation of its teachings, has done that and truly needs to repent.
But sister, if what you're saying is correct, that there is a tradition in many religions, not just Christianity, that we can find what those some would call misogyny.
Oh, yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Then why are you a Christian?
Why am I a Christian?
Is that an unfair question?
No, it's not an unfair question. It is a life question. And so you've put me right on the spot in terms of that life question. And for me, it is because I find in the midst not only the message of Jesus of Nazareth, but in my community and in different traditions, the quest is for being a human fully alive. Evan, there's no place I can go as a woman where I am not going to come up against misogyny, where I am not going to run head-on into patriarchy, where I am not going to find that I am devalued in many, many ways simply because of being born a woman. I have to find the place where I think in some ways I can best do battle. And I find in the healing message of Jesus of Nazareth, I hear, you know, in the covenantal message through Judaism, in the covenantal message through Islam, I find it in Buddhism. I find that there is a core there that calls for the religions to critique themselves and to promote humans fully alive, and I take that on as my message.
Sister, you just played the trump card in the argument against religion based on misogynistic terms, because that kind of, and I had a friend make the same argument the other day, and it was like I could finally see a little more clearly and understand better, because if you look at it in a vacuum, it makes the assumption that, well, if you just leave a religious structure, that you won't find misogyny, right. You won't find patriarchy. That's very disarming when you do that. I just want to warn you. That's very effective. It's very effective. It's such a good point, and it's a really and I appreciate you answering the question because I know it was a direct one, but I think Kitty's phone call leads us to ask these questions. It's important. Tim George, the engineer, is about to start a break, even if I don't throw to it because I'm so late. Here's our only break. We'll come right back, dive right back in. We've got more phone calls to take, and we'll tell you more about the Parliament of World Religions, which is coming up in November, and the pre-parliament tonight. We're coming right back. Coming up in our second hour, Rochester as a photo city. A new documentary is called Photo City. It was made by, of all filmmakers, guys from Ireland. Ireland got interested in Rochester, and they wanted to tell the story about our legacy and how photography manifests today. Is it in our DNA, or is the legacy gone? We're going to talk about Rochester as a photo city and what that means next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're here because in November, the World Parliament of Religions is having an event in Toronto. The World Parliament began in 1893. It brought religious leaders, many different faiths, together in Chicago in 1893. They were there for about 16 days discussing all kinds of interfaith issues, and then didn't have another parliament until 1993, and then we've seen it intermittently every several years since then. And this year it's in Toronto in November for 7 days. It's easy to find the World Parliament of Religions online, and it's really well organized. You can understand the issues they're going to be talking about, learn a lot about it, how to register, how to go if you want to do that. The executive director of the World Parliament is with us in studio, Dr. Larry Greenfield, who happens to be the executive minister of the American Baptist Churches of Metro Chicago and the former leader right here of Colgate Rochester Crozier Divinity School for 10 years. So he's back in Rochester today because Dr. Susan Nowak and Dr. Muhammad Shafiq from Nazareth College and the Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies have helped organize a pre-parliament event. That is tonight, 7 to 9, roughly 7 to 9, 7 o'clock tonight. Free open to the public. Go tonight to the Schultz Community Center. Number one, if you want information about the parliament in November. If you want to get discounted registration and tickets for November, you can do that. Number two, if you want to have a conversation about interfaith issues, these are folks from a lot of different faith backgrounds, and you can have that conversation tonight, learn much more about the themes and the ideas behind the World Parliament. Now, as we just have been talking about, the theme of the World Parliament 2018 is the promise of inclusion and the power of love. And we've been talking about what it means to be inclusive. So let me kick a different question back around the table. Every time we talk about these issues, I inevitably hear from some listeners via email, and they tell me, you know, are you going to be inclusive of me? I've heard from many women throughout my 4 or 5 years hosting this program who say, I'm a Christian and I have no problem with different roles and gender. I have no problem with biblical literalism. I have no problem with, you know, many of these ideas, and now I feel maybe not included if these are sort of the framework and the rules. So, Dr. Shafiq, what would you say to someone? Well, and again, I chose Christianity, but in Islam, in Judaism, in any range of religious traditions, there will be different viewpoints on interpretation of text, understanding of gender roles, and we just talked about sort of patriarchy throughout the centuries, but there are plenty of people today who say, look, I have no problem with the literalism or the gender differences. I embrace it. I think there is a religious tradition there, and I don't think it's a bad thing. What do you say to them?
Well, you know, the reason why we are so divided is, I think, that is there. That is coming from culture issues. That is coming, I mean, from different cultures, from different ethnicities, from different faiths. That division is coming. I think there is a need for deeper understanding of what it is. And we need to go back to our humanness. I think that is very, very significant. Once we understand our humanness, that will finally give us an idea that as all humans, God has created us in different ways. Some are one way, some are another way, some we speak one language, some speak another language, but we shall appreciate that humanness, that all of us, and the blood is the same, all of us are in the same way, though colors may be different, though gender may be different, though ethnicity may be different, that very understanding of our humanness, that is important for inclusiveness. And I think when that comes, then appreciation comes along with that, and that we may differ one way or another way. We may have a different religion, different approaches to our life, in what religion means, in a different way to look towards the creation and to look towards God. That is you know, how we understand that. So the first thing is humanity. I think humanity shall take precedence over everything, over faith, ethnicity, gender, and everything, that we take that humanity seriously. And then we look into our differences, and certainly under that, we will start appreciating our differences, and we will be much more together.
Well, Sister Nowak, I can remember an email from a listener named Mary within the last year who said, I don't see religious tradition as misogynistic in any way. I see gender roles as defined by God. I am a biblical literalist, and what is wrong with that? What would you say to Mary?
Well, to Mary, I have to give her place. I have to listen hard to what she has to say. I have to understand that within any religious tradition, you can apply the understandings of sociology, political science, you can apply psychology, and you are going to have different ways of embodying and understanding. I have to be very careful not to, in the end, say, well, I have the truth. Your way is incorrect. It may not be a way that is attractive for me to live my faith, but there will be the variety. And in the front of that, what I also, as an educator, want to do is to say, if you have indeed engaged your faith on the level of an adult understanding of your faith, where does it take you? But that still doesn't mean that a difference of understanding gender roles, a difference of understanding psychology, is going to take Mary or I to a different place. Because, you know, religion is not disembodied. It's not out of a vacuum. It is shaped by our psychologies. It's shaped by our sociological principles. There is the message that is there, but it always comes encapsulated. And there are going to be women who see their roles very different than I see my role as a woman.
All right. Let me turn to Dr. Greenfield. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to stand with respecting Mary as well. But as having two daughters and a wife, I realize what a waste of talent, of wisdom we have for in the West and East as well. How much waste we've allowed to happen by keeping down women, by discrediting women. And I would have to say that today it's our responsibility to at least confront Mary with the possibility that she needs to be exposed to the possibility that shedding the limitations that have been placed upon her and that she so freely accepts, that she may be denying what God wants of her life in the world right now.
Dr. Greenfield, a couple minutes left, and I want to read a couple of listener comments that are strong in pushing back against the idea of inclusion, not against the idea of inclusion, but against the belief that religions and organized faiths can be truly inclusive over time. A listener in Brighton says she's Jewish. She's been approached many times by strangers who tell her she's going to hell. Religions that focus, she says, on the beliefs in people's heads as the basis for redemption, as opposed to their behaviors, are going to be corrupt in a profound way that's exclusive. And until that's addressed, there are fundamental problems. She says religions are brands, so they are exclusive. They teach people to hate too often. Gary says, Christopher Hitchens was right. Religion isn't the solution to humans reaching their full potential. It is often the problem. There can never be full inclusion as long as beliefs in exclusive superstitions persist. Muslims cannot believe the Quran is the final word, while Catholics believe their church is the final word. At some point, inevitably, they have to collide. So that's two views saying that inclusion with organized religions is a nice ideal, not practical. And in 90 seconds, I want you to figure out how to answer that, and then we'll solve that mystery forever. I'm kidding.
Let me solve it forever.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
No, I think there are plenty of examples of religions that are exclusive. The question is, do we take seriously the scholarships that are taking place in religious studies, for example, that challenge some of the developments that have occurred in all of these religions that are exclusive. Now, I grant that there can be religions that are exclusive, but I think there are traditions where where love, for example, the power of love, the counterpart, the second part of our theme, makes the point that love erases exclusion, authentic love. And we have yet to explore fully what that means in terms of the modern world, where there's great diversity and where we could now be inclusive in ways that we never were before.
You did it in 75 seconds. So, wow. Dr. Shafiq, we're yielding the last 20 to you.
I think if you look clearly to the sacred scriptures of different religions, you may see that the exclusiveness is actually cultural, not religious. Not coming really from the sacred textbooks. So I think if you look closely to sacred textbooks, you will see inclusiveness. You will see more appreciation towards humanity. And that's so that depends upon the knowledge when you see it, when you look deeper into the sacred texts.
Well, the music means we've got to wrap for now, but you can join the conversation tonight at the Schultz Center at 7 p.m. tonight. Information, it's a pre-Parliament event, a pre-Parliament of World Religions, which is coming your way in November in Toronto. Get online, learn more about it, and you can meet our guests in person tonight. There's so much to say on these subjects, and we always appreciate the dialogue with Dr. Mohammed Shafiq. Thank you so much for being here. Dr. Susan Nowak, Sister Susan, wonderful. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for
having me. I've been hearing from your students this hour who said they had you in class, they loved you. Just want to tell you that. And Dr. Larry Greenfield, great to have you back in Rochester. Thank you.
Good to be back.
More connections coming up.